souls are sick. They put nails down on the whole road to make their tires bleed a bit. No, they sure don't say it be like they used to. They once were stoned on grass, but now they're kicking ass. No, they sure don't make it be like they used to. The next day at the work site, the lodgers had a big surprise. Their dozer engine seized up, and their tires dropped likewise. And before they could raise a chainsaw, they found this note and cursed. Cause in the red note dice, these trees are spiked, signs of an earthburst. No, they sure don't make it be like they used to. They used to be the peace, but now they crash just what they preach. No, they sure don't make it be like they used to.
And you are tuned to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse, The Robe, to you. For the next 2 hours, you're going to be listening to Civil Rights on the Street, Civil Rights for the Poor, and Civil Rights in the Rain. It's rain, as anybody can see looking out the window this December 11th, Monday morning. Our show is a little late. We apologize for being late, but we were able to scoop up a few guests out of the rain, including Donna here. Donna McFarlane, in fact, I'm told by this hastily slipped note passed over to me. Donna's a singer, a bodywork person, a poet, and who knows what else she is. Let's see if our mic is working, Donna. Say hello.
Hello, friends and greetings.
Very good. And I like that you get close to that mic. That's the way to do it. We also have a second guest will be coming up after Donna, another musician, a man named Suleiman, who's going to be talking about life in Santa Cruz in 1984 and life in Santa Cruz in 1995. Kind of a contrast and comparison. But before we get into that, I want you to know the call-in number here. If you want to discuss anything that comes up on the air, it is 427-FRSC, 427-3772. This is your show as well as mine. I hope that if you call in, I hope you join us. It's real important. And that's the number to call. I may hold you off the line for a bit if we're in the middle of something, but do keep letting it ring. We will answer your call and you will get on the air. And you can say anything you want. This is not FCC radio. This is free radio. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. So, Donna, you were on your way to work when I just scooped you out of the rain and got you to come on down here.
Yes, I was. But this is better work, if you ask me. So I make time for the right things.
I appreciate that. So, how long have you been in Santa Cruz, and what's your line of work?
I moved to Santa Cruz 5 years ago. My line of work is body work and, you know, assisting people to heal themselves and nurture themselves. I'm a writer. I write poetry and songs, and just for the gift of it, and hopefully someone can get something from it.
And you brought one of those songs and one of those poems with you today in your mind, right?
In my heart, yeah.
And in your heart. And no notes, no cue cards. You're just ready to ramble and roll.
Definitely.
Cool. Well, then we're going to ramble and roll with you. What do you want to do first, a song or a poem?
I feel like I'd like to do a song first.
All right.
That's
well,
all right.
Then belt out that song.
Okay.
The crowds are dull. This ghetto filled in my room, we live our lives here. Let's think of me, let's think, has no home.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah. They have no clothes at all and sleep when the rain is falling. Their queen has no home. The queen has no home. Many roads they travel down are castles to the right. No shoes, no food, or can you tell me how? Is this where you come to? Is this where you come to? La da 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 da. And you tell the children that there's only love. So give only love.
It's like a Christmas song, you know. If you're going to have a singing, let's sing about what you need.
Is there queen has no home? The queen has no home.
The queen has no home. And luckily, the campers have a campground at the moment, but it's getting pretty wet. That's the only legal place for people to be out of the rain. Wow, you've been listening to Donna McFarlane, who, when did you write that song, Donna?
I wrote that about 6.5 years ago. I lived in Virginia at the time.
And you were homeless yourself at some point?
Yeah, about a year and a half ago, I lived in San Diego in the Pacific Beach, and I lived on the sand for 5 months. And I talked to a lot of homeless people, you know, before that too, but I definitely related on a better level that way. And, you know, so hold on to your inner strength, everybody, because that's where it's at.
What got you out of homelessness? Were you able to find a job? Did you get help from friends and relatives? Did you marry a rich guy?
Oh, no. I've never, you know, succumbed to, you know, marrying money or anything, but I had chances to. It's not worth it. What got me out of it was I sold everything I owned, you know, that was in storage at the time, and moved back to Santa Cruz where my friends were, and stayed with a friend for about a month, and then I just kicked butt and got a job. While I was out there, before I came homeless, I studied body work at the International Professional School of Body Work. And so I began doing healing. It's kind of like the wounded healer. And that has sustained me for the whole year I've been back.
And you do have a place to live, and you have enough trust to come in out of the rain with a complete stranger. I'm very impressed. If people want to use your work, are you selling your skills?
Yeah, I am. I try to, you know, do trades if that's necessary, and I definitely do sell my skills as far as vocal work goes. I'm doing an album, and I do body work. $40 an hour, for an hour and 20 minutes.
What about for those homeless people who ain't got no $40?
Oh, I actually would love to invite in on a special deal for free and just teach them. That would be a gift for me.
That would be great. I mean, how can they contact you? Would you like them to contact you directly or through me, or how would you like to do that?
Actually, I have a pager number with voicemail. I can give that number as a private
number.
Sure.
Why don't you do that?
Okay, it's 408-429-0430. Coach Donna, and we can work out, you know, some training for healing and body work, and I need your help too.
You bet, my lady.
429-0430.
Okay. 429-0430 for Donna. If you're interested in learning body work as a skill, it will, who knows, maybe help you as you move from tent to tent, to house, or beach to beach. Who knows? It's a beach. You also are a poet, and you've got a poem for us, you said, about a vet.
Right. War veteran, you know, of any venue, anybody who's been in the war of any kind, really, could probably relate. And it's entitled Tulips.
Tulips.
And it's the tulips, my only life. trenches, water flowing, fire in the sky, tulips smiling off. Trenches, digging, shots in the air, blood falling on my head, tulips smiling off. Lovers in the park, picking tulips are dried. Tulips,
and you were telling me this poem is a veteran looking at a couple about to pick tulips, and this hurts him because this is the last living thing that's in the park.
It reminded him of when he was in the war and everything around him was dead and fire, destruction, you know, bombing, and the only life that sustained his life was the flower, and he didn't want that to be picked while he was in the park. He was kind of having a flashback, and watching it about to be picked was kind of like, you know, breaking his heart, you know, because that was the sustaining memory for what kept him alive. Yeah, tulips.
Well, we're going to go straight from you, and you're welcome to stay as long as you want, but I understand you have a job to get through, so you can't stay.
Mm-hmm.
Rick, take note. Rick is one of our critics who calls in and says we never offer people work or any kind of employment. Here's a woman who has work, but and she's offering actually some skills. So we're still waiting for you, Rick, to call in with your offer of a backyard area for one homeless person. I remember you said that you were going to do that, and the people that you said you were going to call have not yet received your call. So, hey, anybody else who wants to call, call 427-3772. 427-3772, Free Radio Santa Cruz, because that is the station you're tuned to, 96.3 FM. And our next guest is coming right up. I want to thank Donna, and I'm going to do a little interlude here. We're going to hear from another woman on the streets who lost her job.
May I take a call?
You may. In fact, you talk for a bit while I put this tape on.
Okay. Hello again, and as a people person, I just have to make closure and say love and light to everyone, and there's many people out there that are with you, so love and light.
Give us your number one last time.
It's area code 408-429-4030.
429-0430. Okay. And here's a little something to tie this over until we have our next guest firmly ensconced, and we're giving everybody a bit of coffee to drink.
So it's November 29th, 1995. It's about 7 o'clock. I'm on the sidewalk, one of the benches actually, with
Lisa.
And Lisa, you look a little chilly there. You got some heavy socks on, but otherwise you're not as warmly dressed as you might be.
No. I do have a coat, but I left it at Panther Beach because it's too much to carry.
Excellent. You're freezing your butt off here on the beautiful mall.
Very much.
And when are you planning to go back to Panther Beach? You want to borrow my sweater for the moment as we talk, and I can freeze my butt off for a minute?
No, but probably whenever I can find a ride out there.
And how long have you been living out of Panther Beach?
Almost a month.
You were telling me and expressing some rather strong feelings a few minutes ago about how quickly a person can move from a position of some economic security and social acceptability, if not prestige, to a position on the streets where you take a lot of shit and it's a miserable economic scene.
Yeah, it is, totally. I mean, I just find it really ridiculous that a person like myself, or any person, could go from, you know, I mean, I went to college, you know, I worked for 18 years within this country's system, and here I was making almost $30,000 a year working at the university, and now I...
Financial Department of Crescent College?
Yeah, and now I've got a disability, and the disability this SDI that I paid into, working 18 years of my life, is now supposedly exhausted, and I can no longer receive benefits from that. I've been fighting SSI for 10 months. In the meantime, nobody wants to do anything about the fact that I have no place to live, and I'm eating out of dumpsters, and, you know, I didn't choose to be here, believe me. And I don't think most of the people that are here chose to be here. And if you could get anywhere, you know, doing anything about it, people probably would, but they don't feel like they can because it's too much of a struggle on a daily basis because of crap like that. People worried about who's, you know, scrounging in front of their store and, oh, they're losing a little bit of money. You know, personally, I don't give a shit if somebody's losing a little bit of money because there's somebody scrounging in front of their store. Excuse me, I'm starving on the street, you know? Hello, I don't care if you're losing $10 because I'm scrounging in front of your store, you know? I mean, really, I'm sure I've bought plenty of things from the people that are complaining that I'm now spending in front of their stores. I mean, the whole thing is just absurd, and nobody does anything about it. And it's just a big, you know, catch-22 of paperwork over and over again. You know, that's all I do. That's like my job now, just go from office to office, filling out paperwork, having people tell me that they can't really help me, I'm in the wrong line, I filled out the wrong form, you know, and my disability happens to be now reading and, you know, comprehension and that sort of thing, and there's nobody even that will help you with that.
What has happened, and forgive me, I'm going to be clinical and you can tell me to fuck off if you like. What happened, do you have an old circle of friends and support network that stepped away from you when your economic situation became bad?
Yeah, my whole family, all of the friends that I had, everywhere, because they're like, you know, your average Joe middle class, and they evidently don't feel that there's anything that they should or want to do to help somebody that they know and supposedly love, never mind somebody on the street that they don't know with nothing to eat and no place to live. You know, I had a place living at the St. George Hotel for 6 months, and I used to come down here every day, and I'd take two or three people home with me, and that's all I was getting, was $69 a week. You know, my dad was paying my rent then, and I'd take two or three people home with me, and I'd feed them, and I'd let them have showers, and I'd give them their own place to sleep, you know? There's not a lot of people that do that. Believe me, I know, because I'm living out here.
And do you feel it helped those people? Did you feel satisfied with what you got out of it from them?
That's not really why I did it. I just did it because most of them were kids, and you know, I'm 37, and I don't look like I'm 37, but I am. And you know, it's sad for me to walk down the street and see somebody 16 years old sitting on the corner that has no place to sleep and no shoes on their feet and they're dirty. You know, maybe there's nothing I can do about, you know, in the long run for them, but if I can do something to get them off the street that night and put some food in their stomach, you know, then I did it.
And how did the folks teach you that you took in that way?
Pretty well. They were appreciative and they were really nice about it.
Now you're on the street.
And they've in turn helped me a lot since I've been out here. Yeah.
And the folks that you helped out previously?
They sure did. They have, yeah.
So the friends that you had before, let's say your family and also the people you knew up at the university, what's happened with that situation?
And that's just like, you know, most of those people they walk right by me on the street, look me directly in the eye, and recognize who I am, but yet pretend they don't see me. You know? It's sick, dude. It's really sick.
I see. So, you've been out at Panther Beach for about a month. How many people are living up there with you?
Well, there's three of us that live directly, you know, together there, and then there's like another two couples, and then like, I don't know, anywhere between 5 and 20 people that show up there on nightly to, you know, crash there or whatever, get warmed by somebody's fire, or some place to sleep.
Has anything happened to you in the last year, independently of you being on the street, that has changed your life in some other way, that made you come to some new insights about things, or struck you particularly strongly?
Well, totally on a different, vein, yeah. The fact that the reason why I ended up being in the position that I'm in because I used to be married and I was abused, and my ex-husband was drugging me and beating me up and stuff like that. And so that's what supposedly how I ended up with the disability that I have. And I also have a 5-year-old little girl, and they pretty much set me up, my dad and my ex-husband physically pushed me into the door at the Dominican Mental Unit.
How long ago was this?
That was a year ago.
And, about the time that you lost your job?
Yeah. And they, and my ex-husband made up stories about me that my family chose to believe without ever speaking to me. And therefore, he was able to take my little girl away from me. And I've since been to court, I've played the game, got myself a place to live, played all of bureaucratic bullshit paperwork, trip, and, got the SDI. I had income. I had a place to live, and yada yada yada, and went to court and tried to get my daughter back, and the judge pretty much told me, you and your funny haircut can take a fucking hike and go find a psychiatrist to give you a psychological evaluation, and until that time I'm not even going to read your declaration. That took me 2 months to write because I couldn't find anybody to help me write it, and so once he said that, I was like,
which judge was this? Black, Kelsey.
I'm fairly sure it was McAdams. And I had already been through.
Who was the public defendant?
I wasn't offered one. I was the last case in court that day, and I was the only person there that was not offered a public defender. And he told me that I needed this psychological evaluation. I had already been through trying to find somebody to do this, okay? And so I told the judge, so you're telling me that I'm sitting here making $69 a week on disability, and I'm supposed to go pay for a psychological evaluation, and you're not even going to read my paper until then. He's like, yeah, that's pretty much it.
How long ago was this?
That was August.
So your 5-year-old daughter is currently in a foster home with your ex-husband?
My ex-husband.
And
even worse than that, I'm assigned an agency through which I have to visit her and pay $20 per hour to see her. And I have no income.
You've heard of the case of Lisa Ann and Star on the Street, perhaps?
Mm-hmm.
Lisa Ann is a woman who goes around with a musician who's something of a drunk called Cloud. No offense, Cloud, if you're listening to this.
Oh, I know who they are.
Her daughter, her 4-month-old daughter, was taken away by CPS recently in a scandalous case. And the reason I mention it is because the attorney who is interested in that case might be interested in hearing your case. And I don't know if she can help much, because she's about to lose her stuff, too. She takes cases for people that she can't afford to take. But she might be interested in hearing what you have to say, and I'll give you her name and number if you want.
That would be cool.
And this is over. I'll do that or before.
I've literally gone through Yellow Pages, gone through the whole front of the phone book, all the governmental pages. I've called the Women's Crisis Center. Every agency you can think of in this county, I have called. And there's absolutely no one that is willing to help you legally with the family law. And there's nobody that will give me a psychological evaluation. So I'm pretty much just screwed, sitting here in the street with no money and nobody that will help me get my little girl back that should never have been taken away from me in the first place. They made up these stories about me and pretty much, said this, that, and the other thing. And the judge pretty much told me that I have to disprove what they said. And I said, really, Your Honor? I thought this was America in which you were innocent until proven guilty. And he was like, well, I don't know about all that, but you have to have a psychological evaluation before I'm going to even do anything. I was like, yeah, whatever, asshole. The whole thing is pretty sick.
You also were talking about, you're expressing some, you're pissed. When you listen to John, who's the coffee shop owner, kind of the coffee kiosk owner across the street, talking about, you mentioned that about how spirit changing is a much less human import, and let's put this way, loss of money that people have through maybe the loss of money through spirit changing, if that's the reason that businesses lose money, is less significant than the fact that the people who are spirit changing have needs that are much more pressing and immediate and vital.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that maybe I wonder, actually, if the people with these businesses that really do wish that these people would just disappear so that they could make their little extra money or whatever they seem to be so-called losing every day, if they've ever thought about maybe doing something to change what's going on, you know, in a different way to help the people through the government or the system somehow, since they obviously do have some sort of more pull, you know, so to speak, than we do. You know, I mean, that might be another approach of, you know, from the human side, rather than just let's just sweep these homeless people under the rug so we can make some more bucks and buy a new car. You know, fuck that. We're fucking starving out here. I didn't choose to be here.
Let me ask you, Lisa, about services here, like, for example, the free meal, which is out of the River Street Shelter, Food Not Bombs here. Do the people, have you used those services, and what's your evaluation of them?
You
know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. The Food Not Bombs and the Red Church and the Elm Street Church, I think, are all right. The Elm Street one, I don't really particularly care for us requiring somebody to go to a service, you know, because, you know, like, maybe we're not of that denomination, so you're requiring us to listen to preach of a certain denomination before you're going to feed us. I don't really go for that too much, but, you know, I think it's pretty cool that people like Sean and those guys do what they do. You know, they don't have to do that, and it does feed some people that need to be fed. You know, I mean, a lot of people that are feeding are underage, and they're too, you know, a lot of them are too young to even get jobs. You know, and St. Francis is pretty cool too, I think. But the River Street Shelter, I just can't.
About the free meal at the River Street Shelter.
Yeah, I've never eaten there, but I just really can't even hack that place in general, because, I mean, the first time I went there, I was just like, okay, so out of all the beautiful places in this county that there are, and that there's land, this is where they have to put these people, right next to that fucking horrible place.
So, John, who was sitting in your seat before, the kiosk owner, was asking the question, what about, what are you giving back? Here you are, eating all this food on the streets, and getting the food stamps, and using the police protection. I'm giving you his arguments, of course. What are you giving back to society here? And I'm not saying that I suppose so.
Well, personally speaking, it's not a matter, in my eyes, of what I'm giving back. It's a matter of the fact that I put in 18 years of service to this government in the form of paying taxes and, you know, in that way supporting the government, whether or not I agree with it. You know, you don't really have much choice unless you, you know, find an undertaking job or whatever, but, you know, it's like, so now that I'm in this position, it's like, what do I get back? Which is obviously nothing. That's nice, baby.
Hey, who's calling, man?
Hey, we're going to interrupt this interview with Lisa, and not Lisa Ann, but another Lisa on the streets, by the way, who has similar problems. She, too, had a child who was taken. She, too, is suffering abuse from authority, and she has a number of caustic things which you're hearing on the air. But we have a caller from another area that really deserves attention. We got Roland Thunder Mike Sheridan on the phone, who is with the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, the campground, and perhaps with Save Our Shelter, the organization which is supporting that campground, trying to make sure that it doesn't close down, that it receives all the weatherizing equipment it needs. And well, what's going on out there, Mike?
Well, I called in to tell you we've had about 5 or 6 inches of rain out here since about 3 o'clock this morning, and it's still raining pretty heavy. So we'd like to let all your audience know that we can use all the rain gear, warm weather gear, tarps, tents that they can spare if they have anything extra, rubber boots, socks, anything to weather us through these next 2 or 3 days here so that people don't get sick and stuff, you know, stay warm and dry. 75 to 100 people, tents up on pallets and covered with tarps. We covered 20 more tents yesterday with tarps that somebody brought in, four rolls of Visqueen.
Mm-hmm.
And there's about, well, it's just a guess, we had 120 tents here yesterday evening, and so there's anywhere from 20 to 45 tents that still need some cover.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, you know, what we're trying to do is make sure those that are trying to do something for themselves out here are taken care of and they can still function and stay healthy, get a house, get a car, or job or something like that. And some of the people that aren't prepared, hopefully the rain will force them into the armory without us having to, you know, chase them there for their own good. So that'll make the camp easier to maintain.
So, Michael, the number that people should call is that of Barbara Riverwoman, perhaps?
Barbara Riverwoman, yeah. If people are going to donate, they should try to contact Barbara. If do you have her number?
Yes, I do. It's 425-5939, 425-5939, and just talk to Barbara at 425-5939, and there's this... Apparently, well, I mean, we've been talking about this for several weeks on this show, great need for winterizing equipment, and as you see by looking out your window right now, now is the time.
And they could also, if they bring it over to the shelter, they should try to give it, arrange to give it to Mike Bustos, or to Mike Sheridan, or ask for the three Mikes, anyway. And so this way the things that are needed don't get frittered away in the hands of people that don't need them, or who might use them for other reasons.
Yeah, traditionally when people come to leave donations for the Homeless Community Resource Center in that area, they kind of just leave them in a pile. Don't do that this time. Go and ask for either Mike, or Mike. In this case, Mike Sheridan, Mike Bustos, or what's other Mike's last name?
I don't know the other two names. I don't know Mike's last name. But
anyway,
also, you know, we're having a meeting tonight of the Summer Shelters Committee down at the Underground Cafe.
Good point.
At the Veterans Hall at 7 o'clock, so people could bring stuff down there to us, to the Save Our Shelter Committee, and we'll make sure that it gets into the right hands.
Definitely.
And not go to waste.
So this is tonight at 7 o'clock at in the basement of the Veterans Building at the Underground Cafe. Come to, you know, bring any winterizing stuff you have, plus bring yourselves if you want to support the Save Our Shelter, because there is a city council meeting coming up tomorrow at which there will be some monies available, and we're hoping that SOS, I think SOS is going to put in a request for some. Save Our Shelters is going to ask that its request be considered. I don't know, I guess the decision will be made at this meeting. I don't know what SOS has decided, and I guess they haven't really decided, but we've been talking informally, some of us among ourselves, and there are two items coming up on the city council agenda. One of them is simply more input for federal CDBG grant funding. That's just funds for social services and programs, mostly for kind of a hard substance of those programs, like buildings and sites and things like that. That funding will not really be allocated or decided upon until January. They're just doing a public hearing, but it is an opportunity for people to express their concern, for instance, that there not be a removal of the campers, there not be an approval of the Community House Trailers Not Trolls project until there is at least an alternate open-air shelter site, which currently is not on the horizon, as I understand it. That's item 17 tomorrow at the 3:30 Tuesday council
session. You notice they're also on, 17B or something, they're taking money from the Hispanic Community Center down in the Flats, and they're taking money from the low-income trailer project over here off River Street to fund the transitional housing program. I hope some of those people show up. I can imagine they're not too happy about that.
Yeah, that is actually the second item I was going to mention. That's actually item 18, I think, although you may have the agenda.
18.
I think that's what Barbara told me it was. That item is actually a reallocation of money that has not been spent this year, which Community House is trying to grab. That's the transitional trailer project.
It seems a shame to me to do that, take from the poor to give to another group of the poor, shuffling it around.
It is, and it's, although actually I'm going to suggest that SOS propose, if those groups don't want that money, but SOS could well use it possibly to begin negotiations to purchase that site from the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which owns it and seems determined to drive people off January 1st or 10 days after their permit is granted.
Well, I don't know about that. If this weather continues, possibly we could have a foot or two of water out here. And I hope anybody who's listening, the SOS people who have telephones and stuff, can start making the calls here around to the Red Cross, Caltrans, National Guard, or if anybody has any connections with also the Santa Cruz County, or if people have any connections with any large construction companies or individuals who might have like 5 or 10,000 gallon pumps with about 400 foot of hose that if it keeps up for 2 or 3 days here, that we're really going to need out here. We may have 2 or 3 foot of water down in the lower half, and one of the problems that we've had in keeping the place open is that the Santa Cruz County Health Department is ready to shut it down anytime if there's standing water because of sanitation and it's a health hazard.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, I have to say right now that, you know, that possibility exists. And so we're really going to need to borrow some kind of a large pump on wheels, gasoline engine, about the minimum 400 foot of hose to pump it out. If we had that, we could probably do it in a day or a half a day and return it to them. Right now there's water draining off from the back and around the porta potties.
Mm-hmm.
And it's starting to flood down into about where the middle of the path is. And I can tell you right now there's 4 or 5 tents that are sitting in urine, you know, soaked water.
Okay.
And that's going to grow. And that is a serious health hazard. So anyone who's got telephone in SOS that can start making calls around and get that lined up for us, that'd be appreciated.
Yeah, indeed. Any SOS members or SOS sympathizers who have any ideas, don't wait for somebody else to do it. Start putting calls through to those organizations that Mike suggests, the county construction companies,
Caltrans,
the National Guard,
Red Cross,
you know, your grandmother has a pump, somebody, to, you know, to get things rolling on this. And then give a call to 425-5939, that's Barbara, and she can tell you what to do and how to contact the Mikes out at this site. That's pretty much what you're suggesting, right?
Yeah. Well, Robert, I'm going to go.
Before you go, let me ask you a question or two, Mike. Okay? You know, I was at a youth subcommittee meeting a week ago, which I requested that since there is no youth shelter available and there are some young people who use the field, that it might be good for all those bureaucrats who are clustered around the idea of, you know, raising hundreds of thousands of dollars for a youth shelter to consider supporting the existing shelter at the campground until they can find something better. And the response of Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program Director Paul Marceau, pardon me, moi Paul as I call him, was that there is no crisis, everybody goes to the armory every night, and that there are only 63 tents up. That was what he said.
No, we counted 120 yesterday. The highest peak was like 137 about a week and a half ago,
mm-hmm.
and now it's down to about 120. And there's maybe half a dozen tents where people are staying at the armory at night, but they leave a tent up, or someone has left and been away for a week and they're not living there. There's maybe half a dozen of those.
How many people actually went to the armory last night or in the last few nights?
My understanding, 37, but one of the church shelters was closed last night for some reason, so there was those people from that shelter went to the armory.
So the general preference seems to be because the armory does take 120 to 140 people to stay on the field, huh? At least until this rain came up.
Oh, there's more. Well, there was 120 tents. I mean, there's more than that.
No, I mean, the armory takes 120 to 140 people.
Right.
And if only 30-odd people went there, it means that people are making the choice to stay on the field.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, as long as the weather's good. And some of them are not doing that wisely. We think that they should be in the armory or have care and supervision, be in a warm, dry place. They're not prepared to weather all this cold and rain and wet, and they don't know how to, you know, dress themselves right and stay warm and go out and get food and stuff, which it's hard enough for them in the good weather. So hopefully, because of this rain, some of them will make the decision to do that, or, you know, we'll advise them to do that.
You actually had a large meeting on Wednesday, which you began voting on rules, some of which I played excerpts from that meeting at Friday's show, and I'll be playing some more later in this show. How did that meeting go in your estimation? You've gotten some rules down for the program?
I thought it was pretty good. We laid out a general outline and structure for self-governance and maintenance of the site.
And are people responding? Are people pulling together out there?
Absolutely, yeah. We've sent together the map yesterday, so we have a layout of the camp, and we will establish designated areas for each area or group or family. People group by affinity, sometimes by interest. All the bead makers and leather people get together, or you know, things like that. And then we'll have representatives from each area who will hopefully will have this together by Wednesday for the next camp meeting.
What time is that meeting?
It'll be 1 o'clock on Wednesday.
This
is primarily for the residents and how we run the... If people want to get involved, they should come to the SOS meeting tonight at 7 o'clock.
So again, if people want to give any kind of weatherizing gear, or most important in this crisis, that they have access to, or are interested in finding access to a 5-10,000 gallon pump, they should give a call to 425-5939, which is again the number of Barbara Riverwoman, or Brimstone Barbara, as I call her. And well, what else, anything else you want to tell us, Mike? Are you inviting people to come to city council meeting tomorrow?
We could use about 10 durable heavy plastic 30-gallon garbage cans. We're doing pretty good keeping the garbage off the ground, and we got a new dumpster brought in the other day, but CCH and ISSP haven't delivered on their, you know, cooperative agreement to provide us with more garbage cans. We're also trying to get these porta potties removed out of here because they leak. The urine receptacles just leak and it pours out on the ground. And also get them moved where, you know, and control people who go behind them and pee. But we need the porta potties themselves functioning properly to keep, this urine and feces from developing on the ground or flooding into the camp.
And is there anything that your audience can do to help you persuade ISSP to take action on this?
Well, I'm sure they can call if they want.
But the ISSP,
I don't want to wait for them. Especially on the porta potties, yeah. But why wait? We can't wait for them to try and deliver some garbage cans and garbage bags. We can really use some of those.
So folks, get your garbage cans and garbage bags out to the campground and give them to one of the three Mikes out there, Mike Bustos, Mike Sheridan.
Yeah, that way we keep the garbage off the ground and keep it from becoming a danger. That would be real helpful.
The other question I have for you is one of the agreements that I understand was made between the ISSP, Citizens Committee for the Homeless, folks who are running the program and the campers, was that there would be regular meetings with Paul Marceau and Daryl Darling. Now, are those people showing up on the field regularly to meet with people?
They've been meeting with us and talking with us, but like I said, I don't know if they're having a problem getting their money and funding set up or what, but they've been slow to deliver on services. My understanding is the dumpster, Scott Kennedy, or I think it was Scott Kennedy at one of the meetings at the dump pond said, well, the city will donate a couple dumpsters, right, for general cleanup.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's one in here permanently, which is good. But I don't know who's paying for that. It seems to me the city could, spare that with no big cost to them.
Mm-hmm.
If it does help.
Well, considering that you have, what do you estimate the population of the campground to be at the moment?
Well, like some tents are six people. So probably 150. So
you in essence are housing 150, 160 people out there.
Yeah.
At about $1 per person a day or something?
I don't remember what the figures are per day.
But it's certainly somewhat cheaper than motel or prison rates, isn't it?
Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah, we can rent this whole place for the cost of one room at the plaza for a month. Two rooms, excuse me. It's about $760 a month for the plaza. For two rooms, and that's what ISSP has said it has cost to run the field for the porta potties, electricity, and garbage pickup. Plus, they're maintaining two staff here now, which is good. And our monitors and the staff are working well together on sanitation and security.
How are your relations with the staff going?
Real good. We're getting along fine with them.
And you evolved a kind of a procedure for dealing with problems that arise in terms of what you call infractions, people who are engaging in, disruptive or violent behavior that threatens the campground. Has that been happening much? What's been the last week? What's the update on how people are responding to the new rules?
Well, most people are responding good because there were,
Mm-hmm.
Five people have been evicted for hard drug use in the last week, last few days.
There's been some critical stories in the Sentinel, two nasty letters about violence in the campground or about some people running into the campground for sanctuary. But my understanding about the campground generally has been, considering its size, the number of people that it serves, and the amount of time it served, and that the violence of